Welcome to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari Shrike, the artist and creator behind Not Sorry Art. I'm so excited to talk art and creativity with you, so grab a drink, grab a snack, and let's dive in. I also wanted to say that today's episode is sponsored by my book. I have a book coming out. I'm so proud of this, guys. The links are already up. I'll have them in the show notes. But the book is called Modern Still Life, From Fruit Bowls to Disco Balls. It is my take on a step-by-step painting book. I am really excited about it. Not only does it have like motivational tips and tricks to keep you going in your practice, but it also has clear and beautiful and full color breakdowns of the step-by-step process in my paintings. So I could not be more excited about it. If you wanted to check it out, pre-order it. It would help me more than you even know. Hello, welcome to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari. Thanks for being here. Today's episode is about cringe. It's not all about cringe. Cringe is a huge topic. I don't think cringe is entirely bad. I think it's just, as you'll hear in the episode, I do a little bit of research of like, why we cringe, what's the social benefit. But I'm talking about it more in relevance to having a creative practice, showing up consistently for it, and especially showing up for it consistently online. I know from talking to artists and from my own journey, certainly, that cringe, whether we call it cringe, we call it imposter syndrome, fear, anxiety, social anxiety, whatever you want to call it, that sensation is something that a lot of us hesitate to admit plays a bigger role in what we're doing, right? It's sometimes I have seen and witnessed, again, in myself also, a feeling of cringe, knowing that cringe isn't a good enough reason to not show up or not put ourselves out there. And then finding another excuse that is a little more valid, but ultimately allowing our fear of cringe to sort of steer our ship. And I wanted to talk through it a little bit because I think personally for me, talking through it with myself has been something that's been really helpful in my own journey. Because one thing about me that I have mentioned a lot from other people to me, and it's always like, it's a well-meaning compliment, but if you're in the wrong headspace, you can definitely take it wrong. I don't. But I'll have people mention to me, and I have over the years of like, oh, I really admire your practice. I admire that you're not afraid to post anything. And I understand where that's coming from. I have like, for example, worked on painting portraits for years. And when you start painting portraits, when you haven't, even if you're good at other things, like for me, landscape, you're gonna hit a cringe period where you're switching. You have all the infrastructure of like a practice built around painting landscapes, and then you switch to portraits and you're just not there yet. And it is cringy. And I've navigated that in multiple different ways. I have multiple examples of me being incredibly cringy online, not in a way that's hurting anyone, not in a way that's like, I'm cringy because I'm doing something nefarious, but cringy because I'm putting my whole heart and energy behind something that's like not that great, or like it's getting there, but it's currently not the best version. So from someone who has, you know, delved into the deep end of cringe and still been able to post anyways, I thought I would talk to you guys about my mindset and some of the things that keep me going whenever I feel cringy, because I don't not feel cringy. I just know how to talk myself out of allowing cringe to keep me from posting. So if that sounds interesting, let's jump into today's podcast. So this is a podcast episode that I've been stewing on for a long time. And the thing that ultimately pushed me over the edge in a good way is a TikTok by someone by the name of Christy Paints on TikTok. Definitely go follow them. They make great artwork. But they had a post that popped up on my feed, and I think I reposted it. It's such a sweet post, but they basically say, you're cringy until you blow up, or like you're cringy until you've made it, or until you've proved people wrong, right? That the effort of posting only feels cringy when you haven't achieved the success yet. And I love this. I think it's a good sentiment. I think it's perfect for a TikTok where you only have 15 seconds, 20 seconds, a minute, 3 minutes tops to grab someone's attention. But I wanted to sort of expand upon it and like build on what they were saying. So this is not a actually, but in more of like a, oh, also this too. Because the thing is, it's a good point, right? It's a really good point. And I think it stands alone. However, what if you don't make it? And make it is a relative term. For a lot of people, making it is being consistent. It's showing you up and giving yourself the creative practice that you deserve. And my personal philosophy is that if you're a human, you deserve a creative outlet, that all of us have a creative aspect to us. It doesn't mean we're all need to be artists or painters, or that we're all going to be good, or that it could just mean tending to a garden. It could be, you know, lifelong learning. It could be joining a community choir. You know, it doesn't have to be painting per se. But I do believe that all of us have creativity within us. But I wanted to say, what if you don't make it, right? What if cringe, I think if the only way you think cringe is worth it is if one day you prove them wrong and you do blow up, I think that can be a little bit scary of a territory, because I also know that if you look at the statistics, not everyone makes it in the more socially like considered form of success, right? Again, I was just mentioning that success is different for everyone. But if we're thinking of consensus success, so like lowest common denominator, you know, most people would say that you can make an income out of it, right? Whether or not you like someone's artwork or not becomes irrelevant if they're able to sustain themselves on their artwork, right? It's like the ultimate sort of, I've had this happen where people don't like my work and they sort of are like, well, if other people like it, you know, I feel like all of us who have internalized a certain amount of capitalist mentality, if whether or not you agree with someone's doing, there's always going to be that little bit of like, well, at least it's a job. And it's like, it's really kind of its own metric, right? But because I know that not everyone's going to achieve that with their artwork, the stats, and I've talked about this on my previous podcasts, are that most artists will never make more than $10,000 a year. And that doesn't mean that those artists aren't good at all. I know plenty of artists who just, they have other jobs, they have kids, they don't have the stomach to be consistent in the way that this job demands of you. And so they might never be successful in that more traditional sense of like having a big social media following, being able to support themselves off their artwork. And I want to make a case for why I don't think that effort at any level, no matter what kind of success you achieve in your life, should be considered cringe. And I, by the way, it goes without saying, but I do not think that that's what the original creator was intending at all. I think that they were creating community around the fact that posting your art online is cringy kind of no matter what. And again, agree 100%. But I wanted to make this podcast with the point of view of I don't always have the confidence to always be like, I'll make it. I will be able, this will be successful. And it's, you know, from someone who, by a lot of metrics, I have made it, I still struggle with cringe from time to time. And so my reframing device, my workaround for when I feel cringe actually comes for me personally out of a place of class consciousness. I know, don't run away. I know. I've always hesitate to bring that aspect up in this podcast because not a lot of people relate to it. I've gotten plenty of emails where people are like the podcast, stop bringing up capitalism. So maybe this isn't the episode for you if that's how you think. But it informs my art, informs everything I do. And truthfully, because of what I've experienced in life, if I can make it sort of for myself an anti-capitalist, like an act of resistance, whatever it is I do, whether it's growing my own gardens or how I raise my kids or how I, you know, give my money, like that, it always does a lot for me. I know that about my own human creature. And so because of that, I try to reframe ways of thinking around that for myself. And maybe this will make sense for you too. But I would like to push back in this episode and in general with my presence online on the idea that effort is cringy, right? So let's start by talking about why we cringe, what's the source of cringe, what's the benefit. You know, anything that's made it this far in human evolution has to, at least at some point for a long time, served us a purpose. And when I did some research on what is cringe, like what is the emotion behind cringe, why do we have it, why did we develop cringe, basically cringe or secondhand embarrassment, let's just call it that because that's what the science calls it, likely evolved as a social mechanism to help maintain group cohesion and enforce social norms. So basically, secondhand embarrassment is often a part of empathy, you know, to be able to sort of feel what the other person is feeling. You know, and empathy always gets this like, I don't know, it's like this net positive emotion. I think empathy is great, but you know, empathy, I think a lot of times precurses judgment. So, you know, empathy is just like, I think it's a neutral, I think it's a important trait in order to be able to do certain good things. But I also think that empathy, you know, has as much good as it does bad. I think a lot of very unintended bad consequences by people often come out of a sense of empathy of I can feel what you can feel, or like what you're doing makes me feel embarrassed or uncomfortable. You know, I live in small town Texas and I have pink hair and, you know, you do things that don't always 100% mesh in small town Texas. It's minor. No one, the world's smallest violin. But I know that, you know, I operate out of the idea that like people in small town America aren't like inherently bad, terrible people, but rather that there's more adherence to social norms. And when you break those, I don't think it comes out of a place of just like hate. I think that can develop out of anything, but I think it's more of a place of, I wouldn't do that because I know what the social repercussions of that consequence is. And therefore I'm going to try to mitigate your behavior through judging you or saying something to you, right? Like I try to operate out of a place where most people mean well and that cringe can have a social function. And that data sort of proves that. Shared emotional experiences bond the group. I really enjoy studying evolutionary science. And if I can find the study, I'll link it. But this is like a study I remember hearing about a couple of years ago. And someone was saying that we think of a lot of the traits that helped us evolutionarily is like being a strong hunter-gatherer, being tough, being able to weather the storm, having a strong immune system. And certainly there are elements of that. But there was this evolutionary scientist who basically said that the qualities that helped humans are actually the qualities that we largely assign to women. So it's like compassion, community, empathy with other people's, you know, and it brings me back to sort of that adage where the first sign of what we would consider modern day humanity or civilization is the first time we found people who were buried with healed bones, because it means that there was enough of a community, there was enough of a surplus of food and time and resources, and most importantly, empathy, that the people in that community came together while that person was injured, couldn't run, couldn't fend for themselves, and decided to chip in and keep that person alive. And I think that that's really special because it really goes against this idea that in order to be the tough or come out on top or social Darwinism, or, you know, anything like that, that you have to be sort of cutthroat and rugged. And it really turns that on its head. And I always appreciate reframing devices like that. And so if we sort of take that line of thinking, we can understand how important the role of empathy is and how a lot of times cringe is just an offshoot of us having empathy. It's seeing someone swing and miss, seeing someone put effort into something and not do it. And why might that collectively be something that we don't want to experience for ourselves and we don't want to experience secondhand through other people? And it's the same sort of emotional thing that happens that keeps people in a place where they don't act on their art because they would rather let potential live in their mind, never acted upon, but perfect, than try, see where you fall short and have to deal with that reality. It's scary. It's the heart of why anytime anyone does a creative practice, I will always think of them as brave and a badass and amazing and special. And I just, you know, it requires an enormous amount of bravery, you know, in some ways. I've made other episodes where I've mitigated that with like, you know, it's nothing like being a nurse or a frontline worker or anything like that. But when it comes to sort of the internal work of figuring out who we are and our place in the world, it is one of the bravest things we can do. And I think nothing else highlights that like the phenomenon of secondhand embarrassment or cringe culture. The other aspect of it is the enforcement of social norms. By feeling embarrassed on behalf of others, individuals internalize what behaviors are acceptable within their social group. This serves as a regulatory mechanism that discourages deviant behavior and promotes adherence to social norms. So obviously doing art, even if you aren't, you know, are doing it in a way that's really cringy, isn't bad. It's not going to destruct the community. But it stems from a place of cringe has its, like I said, every empathy is not good or bad. Cringe is not good or bad, right? They're all just mechanisms we experience as humans. I have a friend who I had a good long conversation with them about cringe culture, and they brought to my attention that it's actually a really good regulation and like tool because right now, and they brought this point up, it's such a good point. You know, the only way we can sort of socially, I'm going to use the word punish lightly, but for lack of a better word, punish people is sort of with this paradigm of like cancel culture. And obviously, say what you will about cancel culture. Is it a thing? Is it not? you know, who knows? But the idea being that you go for the jugular, you try to get someone fired from their job, you try to get someone booted off the internet who needs the internet for their income. And in America, especially when there's no social safety nets, and especially if they have children or have people who depend on them, that is an inherently violent act. It kind of goes really, really extreme in a way that mimics our current correctional, you know, punitive system, in at least in the United States. But cringe offers us a tool that doesn't hit people in a way that's quite so violent, if you know what I mean. You know, cringe is uncomfortable, very uncomfortable. I'm not underplaying it, but you'll still be able to eat a meal and go to bed if you feel cringe, if you feel socially sort of outcast. And I think, you know, I'm not saying that the hand of justice on the internet is always good, but I think it is an important stopgap to not have the only thing be you're neutral or even idolized, or you're out of a job and on the street. You know, to have sort of shades in between where it's like, hey, that interview question you said was really offensive. Being, you know, insensitive of someone's pronouns, or being insensitive of someone's, you know, ability level, like that, like being really ignorant to that is yucky, like socially, but like that person isn't booted out onto the street. You know, cringe culture has certainly its time and its place, and maybe even has use overall. But this always brings me back to the question of why is effort seen as cringe? If cringe sort of is a byproduct of us having empathy, and that empathy is something that's kept us as a community, which has helped in our evolution, okay. And if cringe is also a device that we use to discourage deviant behavior in the community, okay. But my question is, why then is someone trying to show their artwork cringy? Why is effort cringy? And I think a lot of it is cringe isn't a perfect science. And a lot of it is that people have their own insecurities. Why then is effort seen as cringy? And I think it stems back from this collective fear of a failure, you know? And I think that that's a very common human experience. I also have noticed that the people who tend to peddle the most cringe culture, whether that's comments or response videos or wherever you sort of see it online, I think that it validates a lot of people's inaction. You know, one thing I remember having epiphany about kind of early in my career was just how fast time goes by when you're not doing anything. Let me just say, for me personally, I am the kind of person, and I know everyone's different, who I need a really consistent creative outlet. I think everyone has a creative bone. I don't think everyone needs to constantly be creating. I think some people go through seasons of it. I think, you know, we're all different. I have to assume, in the same way that people have different energy levels and different taste, we all have different production levels. Something about myself is that I'm a producer. I love to produce. I think that's why me and social media fit together so well for such a long time. I like to make, and I make a lot. And so the year and a half that I had a really bad case of artist block after I moved to Austin and graduated, I know that there is an alternate universe version of myself where there's a version of me out there that is so cringe averse because I am a high producer who maybe chose not to jump in and be cringe and try anyways, and chose to not do the daily art challenge and deal with the discomfort of like making work that's not up to your standard and keep trying anyways. Obviously, the tale of that story is that I made enough art. Some of it was, yes, in fact, very gross and cringy, and I didn't succeed for a very long time. And all the while, I got better at my craft, and then I started making work that I was really proud of, and in tale as old as time, right? But there's a version of myself out there, I know, that decided not to. And because I would have been neglecting a part of myself that needed to make art compulsively, and had I developed a wall against that where I was not making art, it would have been a completely, given our culture, natural, although not healthy, reaction for me to be very critical of people who try and don't do a good job. Because how dare you try and make art and fail? Like, clearly you don't have likes. You're doing what I'm too scared to do. And so I'm going to deem your failure as a validation for my inaction. I think that that is the energy pattern that people who are the biggest purveyors of cringe culture find themselves in. And I have sympathy and compassion for that, right? You know, empathy, right? But you can't allow other people's inaction and their own fear and their fear of failure to prevent you from your own journey. Because whether or not you reach that external marker of success, whether you can claim being an artist on your W-2 or you get a gallery show or you get a big following or not, the cringe is not your cringe. It's not your thing to be dealt with. You can push it away and say, that doesn't serve me. So this brings me to sort of my final point, my class conscious point of it all, if you will. Because in my own day-to-day life, you know, one of the things about being an artist typically is you have to sort of work in and out of your ego. And I don't mean ego in sort of the pop culture sense of like you have a big ego, but in the sense that the act of creating art, and for me, the act of painting, involves a little bit of what you put on the canvas you're making from your own point of view. Does this look good to me? Does this understandable to me? Does this make sense to me? Does this communicate what I'm trying to say? And then you have to put yourself outside of your own self and try to look at your artwork from an audience member's point of view. That back and forth, I think, naturally creates within artists a sort of slippery sense of self. I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't know that it's inherently good. I think what it does is it creates a person who's really susceptible to not always be operating out of ego. There are people who would say that that's a good thing, to not be so attached to your ego. You know, I'm pretty neutral to it. I think that it's good to have some separation from that. But regardless, social media and the resistance to cringe culture often requires a version of yourself that is always so singular in your goals and in your mission that you sort of just bulldoze right past cringe. You're like, whatever, it doesn't matter, it doesn't apply to me. And I find that sometimes, like for small business owners, for those like pull themselves up by their bootstrap sort of people, door-to-door salesmen who just have like that, all that rejection, that you almost have to have that blind lack of ego and just like put yourself out there and continue to just like be embarrassed and put yourself up against cringe. But if you're so wrapped up in your own, you know, journey, and you're not sort of that, you can do that. But artists tend to be the kind of people who you can sort of see everything from a bunch of different points of view, and that like tunnel vision ability to just be focused on your goals. I find that I and a lot of other artists rarely can quite hold on to that. So like in the original TikTok, they say you're only cringy until you blow up. You know, I worry sometimes that advice for an artist who maybe for a couple weeks, a day, a couple hours, maybe a season, can hold on to that singular vision. But eventually they're going to get to a point where they're like, maybe I don't have the confidence. Maybe I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe I don't. And I would want to give you a framework that works even if you don't have that level of confidence or single vision goal setting. And that is to say, it is an act of resistance to reclaim effort. So what I mean by that is I'm going to bring in a kind of a pop culture moment. So in the last year or two, there have been conversations around the actress Dakota Johnson, who I think she's great. She's very entertaining. Her interviews are very funny. The Ellen situation is great. This is not a commentary on her, and this is by no means a critique of her at all. Quickly, my like view on nepotism is that I think if any slice of the population was given the time, resources, a childhood where their regulatory system was well functioning and they were given stable housing and somewhat consistent schooling and access to a creative industry, that I think anyone would be as creative as that class of people. So I'm not saying that people who benefit from nepotism are inherently bad. I am saying that the institution of nepotism, and I think it's something that is from the top all the way to the bottom, as I'm about to make the argument for, is harmful. And it keeps a lot of people, unfortunately, out of not only stable housing and food and just like the human needs, but it also keeps people out of having any opportunity to do any kind of creative labor in a full-time capacity. And that inherently, I think, is wrong and I'm very critical of. But one thing that really stood out to me in Dakota Johnson's recent press interview about, I believe it was a movie called Madam Spider, correct me if I'm wrong, it's this like Marvel DC adjacent sort of franchise. And apparently she didn't know it was that when she signed up for it. And the movie may or may not be very good. And she sort of gave this like half-hearted, lackluster promotional cycle. And it was kind of funny because it was sort of criticizing the over-commercialized nature of Marvel and DC and all those franchises. But one thing that really struck me is the benefit of being able to be that haphazard and not having to promote a movie with such earnestness, where if it was another actress who maybe, unlike Dakota Johnson, which for a little bit of background, very wealthy, comes from a very wealthy family, from a long line of Hollywood stars and producers, I believe both sides of her family. Again, correct me if I'm wrong. Peak nepotism, okay? And again, you know, what is the actual person supposed to do? Bow out and not do any creative industry? Again, I think the issue is more to do with those in power and inequality in our whole entire system than it is being mad at Dakota Johnson, certainly. But I sort of noticed her ability to not promote and not genuinely try promoting this movie and sort of do the bare minimum, as opposed to her co-stars, which were having to do this thing where, you know, if you, your next job depends on the success of this current movie, and in fact, maybe your next meal depends on the success of this current movie, you're going to kind of pander and play the games and do the industry circuit. And it is very trite, and it's something that can come off really corny. But the benefit of being able to be like, I don't know why I'm here, I'm not going to promote this, isn't this silly, while funny, I think shows quite a bit of privilege, if I can use that word. And it's, again, it's not a criticism of her at any rate. And what I'm saying is that her ability to walk away from kind of this corny movie and this corny promotional cycle as like a cool kid, and her star has kind of risen despite the fact that she hasn't put much effort in. To me, I see that, and I deal with cringe, and I see a world where if we allow effort, and whether that's effort in promoting this one movie, whether that's effort in taking lots of small kind of corny roles in movies in order to work your way up to a leading role, whether that's cringe and having to be a waitress part-time while you're promoting, which, by the way, you shouldn't cringe to be a waitress. Waitresses work so hard. That is one of the hardest jobs I've ever done. You have to be so people skill and so physically fit to do that job. But anyways, we know how hierarchy works, unfortunately. To work in food service while you're starting out, you know, is considered cringe. And, you know, to offer a bit of a foil to Dakota Johnson, there's Sydney Sweeney, who, you know, everyone has relative privilege, but compared to the amount of privilege that Dakota Johnson has, specifically in regards to her industry connections and her amount of wealth, Sydney Sweeney got a lot of pushback for having to do a lot of these corny ads. She did come out and say that it's hard to make it in Hollywood. And again, I think in the midst of one of the biggest inflation crisis, you know, in American history, maybe not the best move, but it did shine some light on the fact that Sydney Sweeney was having to take all these ads and kind of work all these like smaller roles and really had to work her way up through the industry. And, you know, she got a little bit of pushback that it was kind of cringy. Now, there are always going to be level-headed people in the audience who are like, what is she supposed to do? Like, that's, if you're not connected, that's the game you have to play. And I do believe in the American people that a lot of us have, most of us are coming from a place of like, you've got to do what you got to do if you're going to be successful. And I'm not going to judge someone for hard work, which is a good thing. But unfortunately, when I do look at the current state of cringe culture, I worry sometimes that if we create a system where when someone is giving effort, we're sealing the deal, we're sealing our own fate. And by our, I mean people who are not very, very well connected and very, very wealthy. We're sealing our fate as people who cannot make it to those heights. We have to, as an act of class resistance, and it always starts with ourselves, create a system where when people are trying at something, that their only cringy crime is that they're putting themselves out there, and maybe their art isn't at the caliber, or maybe their art is, and they keep flopping and all their posts only get 200 views. And we cannot create a culture where that becomes such a liability culturally, that it becomes so cringy that we don't allow people to make space for that. Now, obviously, I cannot control what other people do or think. That's not possible. I've always been very adamant that, like, you really can only control yourself, right? And what you do. And so I always try to, in these episodes, provide the power and hand the action back to y'all and, like, tell you what you can do and what I've done and what can be helpful and a real call to action, actionable task, I suppose. And the thing is, I would say that when you're making art and when you're doing something that's cringy, whether it's a promotional cycle, whether it's taking a job that you feel isn't exactly on your trajectory, again, if it's otherwise an ethical move in every other way, but you know, the one resistance you have is it's kind of cringy, I just want to empower you to be like, maybe that's an act of class resistance. Maybe effort and doing what you can to give yourself a leg up, whether or not you ever reach a success that warrants that amount of effort, is an act of resistance. Let's create a culture where trying isn't viewed as cringy. And the thing is, like, in our country, flaws and all, you know, America very much has the groundwork to overcome this very quickly. You know, I think as much as I criticize a lot of the things about this culture, I think one of the things that gives me a lot of hope is that in a lot of places, maybe less so the art world, because it does tend to be a little hierarchical, but certainly in like the small business world and other sectors of the US, as long as you're willing to put in the work, people are pretty willing to accept you and to let you change your station and to really resist tall poppy syndrome, which is just basically the idea that if you kind of shoot up and have success, that other people kind of have the urge to knock you down a peg, which I think is an aspect of cringe culture. This person who I view as my peer all of a sudden thinks that they can promote themselves like an influencer. That feels unsettling. Again, it comes from our own feel of failure or our own anxiety about our own status or whatever it is, and we find the urge to chop them down or take them down a peg. But the thing is, I think we have a lot of good in our country where in the American people, I think a lot of us have the framework to be like, effort is valuable. Hard work is important. Putting yourself out there, despite the fact that you were, you know, otherwise don't identify with the people who have maintained that success, I still think that I'm up for the challenge and I can put myself out there and I can maintain, or I can at least try for that kind of success. I think that that's, I'm optimistic about that basically. So the takeaway being, I love the idea that there's community in cringe. I appreciate that initial TikTok and I reposted it and I hope people see it. But I really wanted to make an episode about this because it's something I've been tending to for a long time. The takeaway is really, let's not make hard work an effort, a cringy thing. Let's resist that and understand when we feel that resistance in ourselves or when we feel it from other people, that that's often coming from a place of our own or other people's anxiety about their status, as well as a fear of failure. And a lot of us have a fear of failure. And I get it. I'm very empathetic towards it, especially in a world that does not financially support people's creative endeavors. We're going to see a lot of that. But it's not only worth it in our own practice to try and put ourselves out there and give our art that amount of push and attention and love, but it's also an act of resistance. And in so many ways, it's an act of resistance. So anyways, I'll leave you with that. Thank you so much for listening. As always, I really appreciate you if you're here at the end of this episode. Know that I'm rooting for you and know that cringe comes, cringe goes. You know, it's an emotion that I think tries to keep us on track and keep us from committing faux pas and flaring up our anxiety. But at the end of the day, we have control. We can override that emotion. And I've always been, more times than not, by kind of a lot, I've always been grateful at past versions of myself for saying, I see you cringe, I'm going to keep going because it's the right thing to do. My art deserves it and I deserve a shot at success. So thank you all again. I wish you the best. Happy creating and I'll talk to you guys later. Thank you so much for listening and thank you for being here. I wanted to also encourage you guys to leave a review. The feedback is incredibly helpful. And if you leave a review, I will read your handle or your name on the following week's episode. Take care, y'all, and happy creating.